If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Cachava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans with 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to cachava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's KACHAVA.com, code FITNESS.
Welcome to a special edition of the Three Down Nation podcast. Today, we are joined by a true CFL legend, a man who I don't think really needs much of an introduction. It's Henry Burris. Henry, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, John, thanks for having me, big man.
I should ask, do you prefer Henry? Do you prefer Hank? I don't want to disrespect the legend.
Oh, no. You know, I'm easygoing, Haji. For me, people call me Hank, Smiling Hank, Henry. You know, you can call me whatever you want, big man.
All right. I appreciate it. Sounds good. Now, listen, I know you're joining us from Florida. You're in Tallahassee. That's correct. It sounds like you've got some coaching coming up.
Yeah, 100%. Because, after this past season, our head coach, James Colsey, was let go. And, you know, with the head coaching transition that occurred, it was another quarterback, offensive coordinator type mind as the head coach, who actually was an alumnus of Florida A&M University, which is where I was coaching the past 2 years, coaching my son, Armand Burris, who's a wide receiver on the team currently. Unfortunately, I wasn't retained. And, you know, it was something that was expected because when a new coach comes in and he's wanting to instill his philosophy and, create a total new culture, you know, he's going to bring in his staff that he's had with him since day one. But now it's transitioned me into the position of making sure that, you know, the next position is worth it because my youngest son will be going into his, final year of high school football in the fall. So really, I'm putting a lot of weight on what decision I make. I want to make a decision that's going to be better for my family and I 5 years from now. And actually, I've started developing and training quarterbacks here in the state of Florida.
You know, 2 years at Florida A&M, one of the top programs at the FCS level. You started off as the quarterbacks coach, worked your way up. You're even the acting head coach late in that tenure. What was it like getting the opportunity to coach at that level and also coach your oldest son?
You know, it was unreal. I mean, you know, to have a chance to kind of make up for that lost time for, especially when I played, you know, for so many years up in the CFL, I miss a lot of those moments, you know, with both my young boys and to see them just taking off, you know, from an age standpoint and, you know, just an achievement standpoint, you know, I want to be able to give back to them at any point possible. And, you know, having the opportunity to be able to coach my son here with Willie Simmons, who was the head coach at FAMU when they won the HBCU national championship. When he left, and of course, now he's the head coach at FIU, his position came available and they were recruiting my son Armand at the time. For me, that was something I couldn't say no about. And just to see how much he's flourishing, to see my youngest Baron, who's in his junior year, kicking field goals over 50 plus yards on a regular basis and on kickoffs, kicking it out the end zone. You know, I couldn't miss those moments. And for me to be here, you know, being able to watch them, for me, it's what it's all about at this point in time.
And are both your sons Canadian?
Yes, they're both Canadian. So, you know, again, they're going to have some value when it comes to Canadian draft time.
Well, hey, maybe they're NFL guys, but who knows? I'm sure the CFL would love to have them regardless. That'd be amazing. Now, I did want to ask, obviously, you had previous coaching experience at the NFL level. You stuck your toe in with the BC Lions a little bit back in 2022. What was the biggest difference in your mind between coaching at the professional level versus coaching college kids?
Well, for me, just as you mentioned, kids, you know what I mean? You have to babysit 24/7. You always want to make sure you're available. Whereas with professionals, they're grown men. You know, a lot of them are parents, their fathers, their husbands. So again, once they leave the facility, they become husbands and fathers at that juncture. Whereas when you're dealing with players, student athletes, they're still student athletes when they go home. You know, they become an extension of your family and something that you have to invest to around the clock. And let's be real, John, you know, some of these young men don't have fathers. And so you play that father figure for them. And, you know, you try to make sure you're instilling just the right core values of what it's going to take for them to be successful, both on and off the field as men first and then players second. Because one thing about these young guys, especially this generation, when they know you're invested into them, they'll invest into you, but it takes you, you know, just showing and building that trust with them that you have as far as their best sake at heart.
I wanted to ask you why you chose to get into coaching, because obviously you finished at the peak of all peaks. You won the Grey Cup in 2016 with the Ottawa Redblacks. You're named the MVP of the game, arguably the greatest performance in Grey Cup history. And then you walk into what I think was a very comfortable media career. You're doing the panel. You've got the morning show in Ottawa where you're a star. And rather than staying in the media, you chose to pursue coaching, a profession that, I mean, media doesn't have a lot of security in it, but coaching has even less. So I'd love to know what it was that attracted you to coaching, even though I'm sure you were very comfortable as a media personality.
Well, I think it's something that just kind of comes from my family lineage. My father coached me in different sports when I was growing up as a kid, and just seeing the fact that there weren't many guys developing quarterbacks, you know, that actually played the position during my journey, and just to see where the quarterback position was failing at the time, and to me, in my opinion, it's still failing because to me, the number of quarterbacks that are starters in the NFL are still the same amount of guys that you feel could actually win you a championship now when I came out, as there still currently are. And even in the CFL, to me, there's a number of guys that are needed to actually coach the position that actually played the position. Because again, anybody can teach X's and O's. Anybody can teach, you know, just from a eyes view or an optic view, the optics of the position. But to me, the biggest difference is the feel. I mean, having a feel as far as what to do in every given scenario, that's a lost art as far as when it comes to teaching the game. But again, at the end of the day, you know, I'm all about transformational, you know, as far as movement and when you impact these young men, not transactional. And right now, I just think the game's gone more transactional. You know, what can I do for, you know, putting more money in my pocket or my friend's pocket? But I wanted to help change that narrative and at least be a guy who could speak from experience and really help divulge into these young men and invest into them and really create that impact that just lies in my heart. And that's really the reason why I got into it. Because while doing TSN, whenever I did some color commentary, the opportunities came about, my palms got sweaty just being on the field, being on site, down there talking to the guys, talking football, talking the X's and O's. And for me, you know, to me, it wasn't going to be complete until I actually, you know, took that opportunity just to experience it and see what it's like. And now here I am, you know, 10 toes down right in the middle of it.
The fire never dies. I love it. I wanted to ask, what is, and you touched on this a bit, but what do you foresee being the next spot for you? Are you married to the collegiate ranks? Like, it sounds like you're prioritizing coaching one, if not both of your sons, or is there a possibility that we could see you back up in Canada at some point in the near future?
Oh, there is a possibility because for me, you know, now being an offensive coordinator, quarterback coach, and like you mentioned, an assistant head coach, and of course, there at one point before everything ended, you know, I was the active head coach at, you know, there towards the end of the season. So for me, it's something I want to maintain that trajectory. You know, again, you know, being a 50-year-old guy now, you know what I mean? It has to fit, just it has to align with where we are as a family right now. Because for me, if it doesn't, from a position standpoint and role wise, if it doesn't fit kind of where the family's trajectory is taking us, you know, with my oldest being a sophomore in college now, a second year, you know, and doing some excellent work here at Florida A&M, looking forward to his third year. And of course, Barron coming up on his final year. If it's not a position that's worthy enough for me taking that, making that move and missing some of those key moments, especially for Barron in his final year, you know, right now I'm not willing to make that move, but my ears are all open. I'm looking at what's going on out there. But for me, I thought about what can I do to maintain that freedom to be closer to my family, but also continue to still stay within the game, network myself. You know, I thought about going back on the media route, training quarterbacks here locally here in the state of Florida and actually doing some weekend camps. And who knows, I'll probably be in Canada doing some weekend camps, just training guys and doing some coaching IQ work as far as over Zoom and such. But it allows me to continue to network with coaches, continue to build those relationships that are important, but also me, more importantly, develop young men, help create a few more leaders is something that we need in this world badly right now from a male perspective, but also leaders not only in the community, but also on the field.
Obviously, coaching at the collegiate level is an extremely time-consuming effort, but I want to know, how closely have you been able to follow the CFL while you've been down in Florida? And I'm curious to know where you see the CFL right now as a whole. How has it changed maybe since when you were up playing, and maybe how has it stayed the same?
Oh, I keep in touch with the CFL. You know, every week, you know, when I'm in my office and we're putting together our game plan for the next day of practice, you know, everybody knows from a Thursday through a Saturday and sometimes Sunday after Labor Day, you know, you'll find me in my office with the door closed, going through all the paperwork and the script and everything, getting ready for practice and meetings. But on that TV, you're going to find the CFL playing. And I love to keep in touch with the game, find out some of the new ideas, some of the new concepts that they're running, try to get some insights on how it's being taught, talking to the guys that I still know that are coaching and coordinating as far as in the league. Of course, I've seen the changes, you know, watching that hash move from being the beautiful wide hashes that we had 22 yards apart to these new hash marks where it looks like the NFL. And, you know, I see the game kind of moving in that area. Am I a fan of it? No. But it is what it is. You know, if the new commissioner has some insight as far as how it's going to put extra butts in the seats and help maximize the budget, you know, for the team to not only do well as far as in player allocation and being able to put funds in the player's pocket and provide the resources that's needed, but also to make sure it's able to invest into the coaches. Right now, to me, the game is suffering because there's no investment to the coaches. That's why it's been a hesitance on guys like myself to come back to the CFL, because, again, it's got to be worth our time as well. Because I know for me, I have a family of four and I'm paying for college down here in the U.S. to some point. I got to be able to afford that. And so, you know, those things have to be met. But at the end of the day, as long as it's putting extra butts in the seats and creating a bit of a buzz, I'm all for it. But, you know, from what I'm hearing, I don't know if it's going to do that. We'll see once the season starts.
So what you're indicating is that the operations cap, at least for you, I won't ask you to speak for other coaches, but at least for you, you see it as a significant obstacle to potentially coaching in the CFL just because it limits what you can earn relative to other places. Is that true?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And especially for us who've been in the game and, you know, when you have families and you have different responsibilities and expenses to take care of at home, you know, it's much more than just a position. You need to have a position that can afford the lifestyle that the family is looking forward to living day in and day out, and to be able to afford a, you know, as far as, you know, day to day with your family, and especially when your kids are going to university, you have to be able to afford that. So, you know, you have to look at those obstacles and you have to weigh the checks and balances as far as what fits for you and your family. And I've heard a number of coaches who've wanted to coach in Canada, but when they've seen, you know, just kind of that obstacle right there, has kind of been a deterrent for certain guys. And again, at the end of the day, you know, we have to do what's best for us and our families before we, you know, continue to look at our dreams as far as coaching professional football. And that's been a big, big no-go for a lot of guys as far as just the player, the coaching cap that's been set. Because at the end of the day, the guys that have the experience, that know how to get the job done, really the guys that coach me and pretty much pass the baton on to guys like myself and the Marcus Bradys and of the world. The reason why guys like that, Durante Jones, who's now the D coordinator of the Commanders, you can keep those guys in Canada coaching for a number of more longer years if the funds are there necessary to help us also afford the lifestyle that we're trying to live on top of that.
As somebody who's thrown for more touchdown passes than just about anybody else in CFL history, since you brought up the rule changes, I'll ask, Do you feel like moving the uprights to the back of the end zone will result in more passing touchdowns?
No. Actually, when you shorten the end zone, it's actually going to lessen the amount of touchdowns. Now, to me, I thought it was a smart idea because when you see places like Toronto and Edmonton where, you know, the end zone is cut off, even in Montreal, I do like the idea of shortening the end zone a bit just so you can have a full end zone to work with. Especially we throw a lot of corner routes up there, so you don't want guys catching it and getting tackled in lane number five, you know, on a track that surrounds the field. You know, you definitely want to make sure from a cosmetic standpoint, you know, it has the same shape and look in every single stadium that you walk into. But no, as you've seen here in the NFL and in the U.S. game, less touchdowns will be thrown because it's 5 yards less that the defense has to cover. And when you have that extra guy on the field, that's one more guy that you have to worry about now when you're condensed and the room is restricted as in comparison to having 5 yards more and being able to run just your regular offense on the 1 yard line. So yeah, it's going to make it more challenging for offenses, but now it's going to, you know, allow it to be much more of a defensive style game, especially later on into the season. But no, more points won't be scored because of that. Less points actually will occur. And you can just look at the U.S. model and that'll help decide that for you.
It's interesting. The CFL has said there will be less points potentially scored, but they think there's going to be more touchdowns. When you were playing, did you consider the uprights at the front of the end zone being an impediment to scoring touchdowns?
In the beginning, yes, because it's weird to see it at the front of the end zone. But as your career goes on and you get used to practicing, you know, with the goalposts right there, for me, it wasn't a deterrent because you knew where it was. It was just part of the plan. And honestly, you use a lot of the Canadian and American guys. You teach them how to use that as like the tree in the backyard. You know, run these rookie defensive backs into the goalpost while you're running your route. You know, use it as an extra guy or extra obstacle to create like a rub situation. And you can run choice routes where a guy just circles right around the goalpost and opens up. So there's many ways you can use it to work to your favor. And that's what you learn, you know, when you put in that time. But that's just the experience of playing a game. To me, at the end of the day, coaches never use that as a deterrent to run certain plays. You know, for us quarterbacks, we just work it in practice and make sure that we're smart. We learn every throwing angle just to make sure we can maneuver whatever throw possible around the goalpost. So for us, it was never a deterrent. And if they're using that, you know, as one of the optics or the measurables as far as making the decision, they're wasting their time because all you have to do is ask the quarterbacks and they'll tell you that's never been an obstacle for us.
I'll get you out on this one, Henry, because I love asking this question to guys who had, you know, really successful and memorable stints with multiple teams, right? You're up here with four different clubs. First time as a starter for a full season was in Sask. Calgary, obviously, you win the MOP, you win a Grey Cup as a starter for the first time. Hamilton, you threw for a career-high 43 touchdowns, which is remarkable. And then you finish your career in Ottawa, where obviously, again, you win an MOP, you win a Grey Cup as a starter. You know, when people go into the Baseball Hall of Fame, they usually have to pick a team, right, to go on the hat. I'm curious, in your case, if you had to pick which one of these four teams would you say really resonates with you? You really feel like you belong to them more so than the others. Could you pick one?
100%. And again, as much as I loved my time in Calgary, Saskatchewan, and Hamilton, for me, it would be Ottawa because, you know, again, that was a team who, you know, hasn't been represented as much in the Hall of Fame as it should be. It's one of our dearest markets as far as in that league. And just look at just how hyped up that market has been, that fan base, and just the excitement and the buzz that's been in the capital city since the team has returned. And just to see how much it meant for us to win that Grey Cup there and finish things out and going to two of the of our 3 years in existence, 2 years of those were Grey Cup appearances. And then for my final game to close it out in that matter, and just with how the city has embraced my family and I, and just the impacts that we've been able to have, not only on the kids there in that city, but also helping achieve more dreams. You just saw a kid like Akeem Mesidor playing for the Miami Hurricanes, who's going to be a first round pick. He's from Ottawa. And he was one of the guys, when I spoke to him, he witnessed, you know, us playing there, watching, you know, the Ottawa Red Blacks and coming back and doing the different things that have taken place there. But there's so many young men that have came through the capital city as far as having the impact of what we did with the Ottawa Red Blacks and really showing those young men that, hey, if you go out and live out your dreams and give it your all and work your butt off, you know, this too can happen for you. And again, if we're able to help create that many more great athletes, young men, to lead in the markets there in Canada and the cities across Canada to help inspire the next generation, it's all worth it. And for me, just to be a part of Ottawa moving forward and being on that team forever and ever and being able to represent them in the Hall of Fame in Hamilton. Yeah, for me, I couldn't hesitate with that because, again, Calgary's got enough in the hall. Hamilton's got enough in the hall, and so does Saskatchewan. But, I represent them all because, to me, I loved every single fan base and all the people who are friends of mine. But at the end of the day, you know, we got to show some love to the capital city, and I'm thankful and blessed to be one of the guys kind of leading the resurgence of the red and black back in the Hall of Fame, and especially representing that city.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Hank. We really appreciate it. And we wish all the best to you and your family down there in Florida.
Hey, John, always a pleasure, man. Good to see you. I love that beard, man. You're still looking young, brother.
I'm trying.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.